LDS Answers promotes, markets, and distributes material that strengthens faith in Jesus Christ and supports the restoration. LDS Answers encourages civil, constructive, online discussion examining the important issues involving the life of the Prophet Joseph Smith, church history, doctrine, and other tough questions. If you seek real LDS answers to the tough questions, please visit www.ldsanswers.org. LDS Answers is a project of the Joseph Smith Foundation.
Welcome to the LDS Answers podcast. The following interview was conducted with Julie Smith, the co-founder and director of a Kimber Academy school in Lehi, Utah. She joined us to discuss real answers for families who are struggling, for parents who are worried about apathetic youth or rebellious teens. She discussed the importance of raising a higher standard for music, of encouraging the father to become involved in the home education process, and of motivating youth by engaging them in the battle lines of our time. Overall, possible solutions for families who are hurting. If you are interested in a list of the resources and material that are mentioned during the interview, including the articles, books, quotes, and so forth, a list is made available on the LDS Answers website. That's ldsanswers.org. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to talk with you today. Tell us a little bit about your school and how you got started in the whole realm of education.
All right. Well, thank you, Hannah. It came about as an accident, actually. It was kind of just thrown my way, but of course, it's been a lot of fun, but it started out with my two older children when they were 14 and 16. All of a sudden, as homeschooled children, most need more peer interaction. And all of a sudden, I found that I could not offer that. I didn't know what to do. And so at that time, public school seemed to be the only option. But of course, I didn't want to throw them out there to it full time. So my two older children entered the public school system for a couple months. It was really only, and they were just going part time. But my one son, he started changing on me. And it was something where you couldn't really ground them because you didn't know what was happening, but you could just feel, a mother can just feel something is shifting. And so with some prayer and fasting, basically the Spirit led us to Kimber Academy. And I remember Kimber was around for a couple of years, and it seemed like all my neighbors were part of it, the start of it. And I remember them trying to get me to go, and I would be like, no, I could teach the Book of Mormon at home and save $200 or $300, because homeschoolers are cheap. And I can do it on my own. And so I kind of fought with that for a while, thinking, why are you sending me this to this school? I can do this. But I remember going to what we have is called a parent night, which is like a training for parents. And a friend who had their child in the Kimber invited me to come. And so I went. And I remember as I was driving to the meeting, I was kind of having like a small meltdown, thinking, Heavenly Father, if you really want me to pull my children out, you are going to have to step in somehow and make it very well known. Just because at this point, I had given the education to my children through their own fasting and prayer. And this is something I didn't really want to trump them on. That could be, to me, kind of devastating. And so I just remember, I'm not a sign seeker, but I'm like, give me a sign. I just need some kind of sign tonight, some kind of witness. And so I went with Dr. Kimber, and I was listening to him. And he was speaking, and those of you that have heard him, you know that he speaks quite boldly and speaks with quite a mantle. And I had not met him except for a few seconds introducing my name prior to that meeting. But when he was done, he came right straight up to me And he grabbed my hand and he said, basically, that the spirit told him that you have a 14-year-old son who needs to come into Kimber and that you are to obey. And that was a big enough sign for me. And so we started our journey, and I went home that night. I was so excited about this school and this program and everything it had to offer because it was just beautiful. And it just felt like home, and for children to learn with the Spirit. And, you know, mothers are still in charge because, boy, after 23 years of homeschooling, but at that point, 16 years of homeschooling, I didn't really want to let go. I came home, and I was so excited. I was telling my husband all about it. And he just looked at me and he was like, well, do it. Go enroll him. And I looked at my husband and I'm like, you just lost your job. You're unemployed. How are we going to do this? And he just was adamant. He's just go do it. The Lord will provide. But in the meantime, my older daughter was downstairs and she was listening to this whole conversation. And she was one that I wasn't really worried about it. She's a go-getter and very bold and with her standards very strong. And so she was doing missionary work as it was out there in the school system. But she heard it, this whole explanation. And I have always taught my children that when you ask the Spirit, and then if a Spirit says to do something, you just do it, no matter what. So she took that challenge in English class the next day and asked the Spirit if she should attend Kimber Academy, and she was told immediately to unenroll and to join the school. So I remember her coming home and so excited, but yet I wasn't, because that was $500 or so now of tuition and being unemployed. But again, when the Spirit calls, one must obey, and the Lord has provided every step of the way. And so that's kind of the story of how we entered Kimber Academy. We walked in the doors and it just felt like home. It's very different. It feels like church and school, and it's kind of hard to recognize because at that point I had never seen anything like that. So it was really odd and I couldn't make sense of it, but because it felt good, we stayed.
And now you own a Kimber Academy.
And 3 months later, I remember the next day dropping my children off. And I was kind of just a little bit excited, thinking, okay, I'll go home and I'll homeschool the other three now at home. And this will be so much fun. But I remember feeling the impression to stay. And that this was for me. And that I was to learn every single thing I could possibly learn and get my hands on and hurry as fast as I can. And I thought, what? There is no way this is for me. I'm going home. Mm-hmm. But 3 months later, I was running that school after Dr. Kimber's cancer flared back. And then very soon after that, I became owner. So at first, what I saw and what, you know, my training was, is this is a school of restoration, restoring God, family, and country. And for those of you that do not know, Dr. Kimber is the son-in-law to the great, late Cleon Skousen. And that was exciting to know that because I had read some of Skousen's works and I had known of him. So to have that tie was extra special. So to know that this was a school that has a lot of Skousen's writings all through it and a lot of his vision really made it exciting. So Cleon Skousen was known to teach from the perspective of the Founding Fathers, correct history. And he had studied and wrote a lot of books, especially The Making of America and The 5,000 Year Leap, which shows the principles and the stories behind early America. And so it was exciting to be a part of that and to have that within our academics, to know that we were part of restoring what the Founding Fathers had started. So in Skousen's writings, it talks about how there will be youth and a future generation that the Founding Fathers had seen that would rise and restore these principles. And so to know that we're a part of that just really excited me. And so there's also the restoration part when it comes to the family.
putting the father back at the head, or you can call it the patriarchal order.
So as you're working with parents, what kind of fruits have you seen? How have you seen this help youth? How have you seen this help families? Have you seen those kinds of fruits?
One of the things as an owner or as an administrator, I have the opportunity to interview families. And families do come and they're led to this as a solution. They're looking for a solution. I get a couple types of families. One is looking for the solution. Their family is falling apart. And they usually, it's usually one child that is the squeaky wheel of a family. And so they want to immediately put that child into the school or see that we fix that child. And I've seen this over a course of many years of this. I've also seen other types of families that have come and they're just led. Their family is fine. I mean, things are good. And they just are led by the spirit. So it's kind of two extremes for me. But the ones that come in through the doors, those are the ones that with the families that they struggle with and are looking for solutions for that child. At first, when I first started, of course, I see the child, you know, and we work with the child. But over the course of the years, and I think it was about my fifth year into it, I just kept seeing this pattern, just this. And then they would leave and nothing. They're just, the child learned how to feel the spirit. The child learned how to work with the spirit. The family was starting to be put back together and because we focus on relationships and the family structure. But then they would just leave and it would go right back to how it was. And I personally was just watching these families out in the community and thinking, oh man, did we help? What is the fruit of this? Some yes and some no. Started asking questions myself. How do I help? How do we awaken these youth? I would see them come in and then they would be like on fire. The whole family's on fire. Everybody's on fire with the newness of this program. And then after 3 months, it always died down. And I always call that the honeymoon stage in the academy. And I will train the teachers and we're looking for that because it's real. There's about 3 months and then people have to make a choice and they'll either go back to sleep or they'll keep going looking for answers or they'll leave. But as an owner, you don't like the turnover and you want to keep those families. So I just kept searching for answers. How do I keep them awakened? How do I help these youth to keep that fire that they're feeling for the very first time and just loving? And I don't want them to go back to sleep and just back to their lives. And of course, the Lord will always teach you through your own experiences how to help others. And I didn't see this one coming as an answer to my questions, but my own family fell apart at a critical time of while I was asking these questions and looking for solutions. I have two boys that both of them pretty much went down at the same time, and I thought that was kind of odd for one thing because we're a homeschool family and we've done everything, according to the church handbook out there, family reunion, scripture reading, temple, Sunday worship, everything. The homeschooling, we put that in just to make sure that the home environment was protected. But little did I know that it is actually the culture that is destroying families and that children go back to sleep. Families go back to sleep after being awakened by this great spiritual awakening, but they go back to sleep because of the culture and the attacks on the family. And it wasn't until I dug deep into my own family, because I've always been taught that a child who is at the squeaky wheel is not because they're acting out. It's usually something broken in the family, and to look internally, look at the structure of your own family. And so I took that to heart and not wanted to just fix my children, but I wanted to fix the family because I knew something was broken. And I found that the culture had played a very important part in this. And right as I was asking these questions and right as I was entering this very dark period as a mother, this is when I
Well, the Joseph Smith Foundation found me, Hannah Stoddard found me, and I thought that what a tender blessing it was, because she had solutions, and was I willing to listen to her and put them to the test was the real question, because they were not your normal answers to a society that is so about outsourcing our families and help and relying on other sources. To start, what happened was with my own children, really quick, not to sidetrack too much off of these principles, but I had a son who returned early from a mission who had hurt his leg, and while he was taking time to repair, the adversary stepped in and created a lot of doubt and questions, and little did I know that early return missionaries really struggle. This was the first time I had heard that, and I didn't understand why he was struggling with his testimony after being out in the mission field. But as he was struggling, his brother likewise began to struggle. And again, I had no idea what was going on in our family, and we, you know, would unite really tight and try to figure this out. But it came about because of the culture and because of the music and because of the media and because of these things that I thought were pretty much out of our home until I had dug deeper. I started digging deeper and trying to figure out what was attacking my own family and what was going on, some of these hidden attacks to the structure of our home. And the very first thing that I found was the patriarchal order. After learning and studying the patriarchal order, I found that we were way off. And I did not know that. I had always respected the priesthood that my husband had and him as the head of the household. He's very shy. For those of you that do know him, he's very shy and he's quiet. And I've done everything I can to still keep him as the leader, you know, and respect that role. We found that not only just his silence and being quiet had become possible an issue, what we found was that he needed to be home. And he has always worked 2 to 3 jobs, and he's always been gone, even at nights. And so the very first thing that we did after studying the patriarchal order and how important it was to put that family alignment in, as the first step into repairing the home, was he came home. We figured, well, we fasted and we prayed and we tried to figure out ways to get him home so it wouldn't hurt us so much financially. But he made that sacrifice and he came home, and he's been home for the last year every single night. But that was the very first thing that we learned that was broken in our home and in a possible solution for other families. I'm very, very black and white, and when a prophet speaks, current or old, I've always listened to it. And so I decided, okay, Hannah, I'm going to try this. We're going to see what to do. And what is the very first thing? The music. To turn to the music. And I'm like, but Hannah, there is no music in our home. That's wrong. Everything's fine. The only thing that we have is country music. That's it. And then I remember being given a whole bunch of articles on music and what the prophets have said. And so the very first thing I remember that you told me to do to get the family in order, after learning the patriarchal order and bringing dad home, was to put that music on and do the highest level of music and purge everything else and put the highest level music on to use it as a healing tool for the home, put on praise music. And so I began doing that as an experiment, because I'm experimenting.
And as some specific examples, you're saying sacred music, music with no backbeat, music that yes. You wouldn't consider pop music, music that's very reverent.
Very reverent. It's all praise music is what I call it. But it's your hymns, your highest level of hymns, no backbeat, no double beat music whatsoever was allowed in the home at this point. And so we put that on, and we had that on, I know, for 3 months straight from morning to night. And when my second son, who was, he had very dark days where he wanted to take his life, and he had attempted a couple times to do so. And so we decided that we would use music to see if we could heal him. We had now put the father back in the home, my husband and I. He's home at night, and he is giving blessings whenever he can. He's counseling whenever he can in his own way. Again, I didn't know that this was a broken part of our family, but my husband has always presided, but I always did the leading because he was gone at night. And so I always did the counseling, and I always spoke to my children, and it was always me. But this time, it was my husband who was trying to give the words of advice and trying to build that relationship and trying to help that son. And, oh, that was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. But to really to do the healing that needed to take place, to really turn him full circle, was the music. So by putting that music on for 3 months nonstop.
So first you purged everything that had backbeat.
Everything.
Everything that you would... in line with all of the words that the prophets had
everything,
said. And yes. Then, but you replaced it with the sacred music. And like you said, you had it on morning and night.
Morning and night. It never left. When they went to sleep at night, I turned it up to where everybody can hear it all throughout the house, just so that way they would go to bed. And I remember the missionary son, he said, there was one night I had forgotten to turn it up, and he's like, I need that. Would you please turn that up really loud like you usually do? And so even him, he needed it for what he was dealing with. But the son, the second son, the one who was struggling with wanting to die and to end his life, which is really hard because, like I said, our family was fine. We've gone through this educational program. But what was wrong was the culture. We had not restored the culture in our home. And this educational system cannot take place properly without the culture.
And by culture, you mean the movies, the music,
yes.
The activities, the entertainment, the recreation.
All of it. Okay. All of it had to leave and to change. I remember one night my second son came home, and you could tell in his eyes immediately that he was not there. And as I was dealing with him, and we're probably about a month or two now into knowing his situation and working with him under my husband, but he had come in, and you knew that this was not a good day for him and that he was struggling really hard. And I stood there and I'm like, I really don't know what to say. My husband at this point didn't know what to say. And I remember hearing, turn up the music so loud that there is nothing that can compete in his thoughts. I thought, that's so crazy. I'm going to be stoned by my children if I turn it up that high. But I did. And I turned it up so loud, and I walked away from that son, just leaving him to that music really loud. And I prayed and I went to bed, just please protect him, you know, that this music will reach him. And the next day he awoke, and his eyes had changed so dramatically. And while he was going through these dark, dark days, his eyes would reflect. And it would be such a process to get him out of that wanting to end his life. But this was the quickest remedy I had ever seen. It's such an extreme by having it on so loud where he could not think suicidal thoughts. And so from then on, I looked at that music kind of as a protection of our home. It watched our home. And so the music continued on for another 3-4 months at a all day, played all day long. And to this day, it's always on. There's Hannah has a great playlist, whoever wants it, that I listen to every single day, and it's all through the home. So I'm a firm believer that part of the restoration is restoring the culture, and that families have got to see what is attacking our family. It's the patriarchal order, it's the music, it's the media, it's all of these things that we are talking about. So it's really cute, my son now, and we're a year and a half later with the music. But after he was healed, he then decided that he was going to, you know, tempt with it again. He wasn't fully converted, that this may have been something that, you know, helped him. Even though he recognized it, but he was going to test the waters himself. And it's funny, his story makes us laugh as a family to watch this happen, but God had a cute sense of humor with this boy to teach him a lesson not to touch music ever again. The very first thing that happened was he had bought a new car, and he went to, of course, go listen to music, and the stereo broke. And so he then has another stereo system, and he puts it into the car, and it breaks. And so you would think that by now he would have learned his lesson after two stereos now breaking in his attempt to listen to music. No. And so then the third time is he gets an MP3 player, and he goes to listen to music, and he drops it. He doesn't know he drops it, and he runs over it with his car. And so there goes his music again, and the last time was the last that he needed to awaken to the situation, that not to touch the music. And that was, he decided, okay, I'm going to try it one more time. I really want to listen to music. But the Lord had, that was his final warning. And that is, a friend gave him an MP3 player again. And he was so excited. So he was driving home in his car. And there was a balloon. This is his, like, last day of work of some sort. And there was a balloon in the car. And his window, he went to roll down his window, and the balloon caught hold of the MP3 player and took it right out the car window. Right at that point, he said, all right, I'm done.
So if there's a parent listening here right now, and they have a child that's struggling, what would you say to that parent? Just, you know, two things. What can they go and do right now to begin on this process?
I think the very first thing I would do, if you did not want an academy that teaches children how to feel and hear, the very first thing I would do is I would strip that music. I would. And I would put the family back in order. Those are the very first two steps. And that is what we now train on in the school itself is, we talk about the music constantly. We're always exposing what can and cannot be, or what is classified as things to come into the school itself, just so that way families can awaken to the idea that what these musicians, these artists, you know, should not be played or worshipped or whatever, and why.
So what do you do as a school? I mean, what is your school focused on? What drives and motivates your school?
Good question. It's really fun. At first, there's so many different educational systems, and it's almost like kind of we're in a time period right now where Joseph Smith was, where, you know, he lacked wisdom and he goes to try to find answers. And that's kind of where we're at. There's so many different types of educational systems, and everybody's just a little bit different. And especially here in Utah, we're flooded with private schools, charter schools, and everybody trying to do this. But really, in reality, there is only two educational models. There is the Greek, and then there is Hebrew. And Hebrew is the education that both Jesus Christ and Joseph Smith were educated in. And it's a home type education. It's where the father is at the head. It's everything that we've been talking about. The father's at the head. There's projects, and the child is not serving oneself. It's serving the family. From a young age, the mothers are in charge of their children's education from like 0 to about 8, 9, right in there, give or take. And then they go, as soon as they have been taught character and morals and values and how to hear father, then they are then handed over to father for the rest of their education. And so it's a beautiful program. It's all about the heart, like I said, and developing a mission around serving Jesus Christ and others. And so
The other model, as I just mentioned, is Greek. And Greek is all about head knowledge. It's all about facts. It's all about your loyalty to the state and to the government and to experts. Oh, experts plays a big role in this Greek. Everybody, we're all outsourcing to an expert. Everybody's running around being experts. Where in the Hebrew model, the father is the expert. He and the children are trained to be loyal to the family, not the state. And the list goes on. Study Hebrew versus Greek, and you'll be led. But how we play a part in that is Kimber Academy is a Hebrew model. It hits all the principles that Joseph Smith revealed. It goes through every single one of them, and then what Brigham Young taught as far as a family must make sacrifices for an education. It's all about sacrifices, so it's not about pleasure and about oneself. It's sacrifices, and blessings come a whole hundredfold from it. And I've seen so many people make sacrifices in this type of education, just even money-wise. Parents will come, and they're like, I cannot afford that. Like, in my own situation, could not afford it, but the Lord calls those that are willing to listen and to hear and to help their families, He will provide a way. And so I watch these families, one after another, who have nothing and cannot figure out how to come in, but they enroll and they take that step. And I tell a lot of people, this is a faith-promoting school, and it starts with the parents making the very first choice in practicing faith and exercising it. So you take that step. And every single time, the family is blessed. Whether a father got a raise, there's a bonus, there's unexpected cash in the mailbox. It's unbelievable how it happens. But sacrifices is one of the principles. Another one is it's not supposed to be free education. Brigham Young was huge about not to steal, you know, and to take the taxes and to rob from each other. And so this education must be free and that there would be value. And I see that as an example, I see that all the time, where those families that do come in, and, you know, in the early days when I was starting this school, I just had a big heart and I was like, everybody just come and I'll figure it out later. Your tuition. But they, those that want free, it comes with a price of dependency and not pulling their weight. And so free is not the way to go for education. If you want value, you must work for it and you must sacrifice for it. Another part of the school is the curriculum. I haven't said anything a lot about that, but the curriculum is God-centered. It's every step of the way is, and that's the Hebrew model, is that everything points to God. There is nothing that is left out. One of the things that I love the most, and most people miss this point when they are looking for this education, that the Lord's way is different than what our way is. It's not even going to look the same. And in fact, not very long ago, if you remember that, I don't know, Hannah, if you've watched the movie Indiana Jones, and, you know, in my younger days when I was a child, I watched that. And I was thinking about this principle a few weeks ago, and the thought came to me when the main character had to choose out of, there's these cups that he had to choose. What would be the Jesus Christ's cup? And if he chose right, his life would be saved somehow. And if he chose wrong, then all doom would fall. And so his buddies were all like, you know, there's the cup that's got the jewels, and there's a cup with the carving, and they're all trying to pressure him into the elaborate and the beautiful cups that might be it. And the main character, he all of a sudden has an aha moment, and he's like, no. It's plain. It's very plain. It's the carpenter's cup. And it's funny that thought came to me as I was thinking about, you know, God's ways are very plain, and it's peculiar and it's different and it's not what we think. And that's the way Kimber is set up. People miss the mark all the time of its plainness is actually the most beautiful part of the whole school. a lot of times you'll go into classrooms out there in the public school system, and every inch of the walls are just decked out in busy work and artwork, which is cute, but even from the ceilings and everything is all decked out. But at Kimber Academy, we believe in just one or two pictures on the wall to not distract from the spirit. We work with the spirit, and that is one way. We're very peculiar, and we follow that principle of just plainness. The Lord's ways are very different, very simple, and that leads me to the curriculum. A lot of people have a hard time with the curriculum. And they see its imperfections, or they'll see its plainness, or there's nothing there. But the way it was set up is so beautiful. It's to teach a child to govern in three steps. So in the curriculum, the students are taught how to write their own textbooks. And every student from the ages of 5 on up are writing their own textbooks in their math and language arts and science, and everybody's looks different, and it all has a purpose. And then they're all to serve with it at the end of the year. So they start out with a person in mind. Who are they going to write their textbook for? And then how are they going to go through this process of creating it? Of course, it's beautiful. And if you want to watch children come alive and learning, that is one way, is to know that they all talk about who they're going to serve and who they're going to give their book to and at the end of the school year. But for example, like one child is in fractions in her math. And she decided that she was going to serve her niece, who will be homeschooled in the next couple years. And she decided to write all the curriculum that she will need for her niece. And so she's writing a math book, but her most favorite thing in the world is to cook. And so she's making a cooking book, a cookbook, based upon her fractions. And we write story problems. The kids learn to write story problems, so that way they see real life application as they're doing it. And all her story problems are centered around grandma and grandpas and aunts and uncles, and these story problems that have to do with food. And then of course she's put some recipes, family recipes, into this book that she's creating for the end of the year to give to her niece. And so it's really beautiful. But the three steps that the curriculum teaches is how God trains us to govern ourselves. And he teaches us in three steps. And the very first step is to know the principle. You always need to know the principle, which is a celestial piece of truth that's never changing. But you need to know the principle. The second step is you need to know the rules, and what you can do and what you're not allowed to do. And then the third step is, now go pray and go do. Just go do. And this is based off of, you can find how the Lord operates with governing. And Ezra Taft Benson's talk, not commanded in all things. And sometimes I like to think that Dr. Kimber and Ezra Taft Benson had a lunch over this article. And Dr. Kimber wrote the curriculum based upon this article, is how I always view it to go down. But as you look at the curriculum, you will see it's all designed in those three steps. And the purpose is to get kids to learn how to learn. If you don't know something, it's not in the book. So how are you going to figure that out? And that's what's so much fun, is to watch these kids. They'll come to me and they'll say, Sister Smith, I don't understand this. And I say, well, where could you go find that at? How could you learn? Because the way it's set up is it leaves a lot out for those that take that further. I believe the curriculum is very inspired. Julianne Kimber is an inspiration to us all. And if you haven't looked at the curriculum, I suggest do, and see if you can see the three steps and compare it to that article. Benson continues in that article talking about how, you know, we can't wait for man to tell us what to do. We have got to learn how to just go do. And so it's a beautiful program that is written. We also are part of the restoration itself, as far as Joseph Smith revealed educational principles. some of the principles that he restored is, first of all, he said that everything must be compared to scriptures, that nothing can be taught unless it can teach the truth that was revealed. And so in the school, everything is compared. There is no truth that is brought. There is nothing that is brought in without comparing it to the standard works, to the scriptures. In fact, when Dr. Kimber first started the school, he didn't have any curriculum at all. The first whole year was all based upon the scriptures, math, science, language, arts, everything, history, everything was done in there. And it wasn't until parents begged, you know, we need guidebooks. We need to do something in our own homes, is when he wrote the curriculum. But everything is based off of scriptures. And a lot of times parents will say, but that's so much religion. No, it's not. We can't get enough of it. Once you start seeing God in everything, and you start seeing his truth mixed with math and how he created the universe with certain numbers, he has favorite numbers, and you start seeing that in the language of math. There was a language, and we have taken it down just to symbols, but when you can put that language back in and you can start seeing math and equations and patterns and repetition he speaks in all through the scriptures, you can see math. And so it's beautiful. You can't get enough of this when it happens. And the fruit, it's beautiful when children can start seeing this and they're not taught like how I was taught, where it's all, everything is segregated and you're just had church on Sunday and scripture reading in the morning or at night, but to learn truth in every subject is beautiful. And these children who can see it as a whole, that is magical.
You know, as I have worked with parents, one of the primary concerns and the worries that I've heard is how to help youth that are feeling apathetic, just apathetic towards the gospel, towards life, and also youth that are struggling with rebellion. And you have mothers and fathers across the world, they're breaking their hearts over their children. As you have studied and applied the revealed educational principles found in the scriptures and inspired words of Latter-day Prophets, have you found solutions for struggling youth?
We try to undo John Dewey. For those of you who do not understand or know of John Dewey, he was an educator in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and he set up an educational system that we have now, which is the public school. But we undo that, and one way we do that is we do not segregate subjects whatsoever. We do not go from one to another with the bells and the whistles to move us along. That was a factory agenda of John Dewey's, that he wanted people trained in the near future to perform and act accordingly. And so we have undid that. And so what we do is just, it's basically one subject, all testifying of Jesus Christ. So whatever our message is for that day in the Book of Mormon lesson, a lot of teachers will then just bring in the math, the science, the language arts, and the history, and it all ties together, and it's beautiful when it's done. But some of the subjects, if you were to separate them, science is absolutely beautiful the way that the Kimber Academy is set up, because we teach a creation science. We teach all the principles, all everything to do with the creation. There is no evolution teaching whatsoever. We speak about how it's a young earth and how we even teach about the rounds of an eternity, so children understand time within science. Children who are taught science always have to compare it to the scriptures. That is the number one talent that is taught at Kimber when it comes to science. Every subject has a talent that we focus on rather than the actual academic. The academic is only a tool to teach that talent that we want. And so when it comes to science, they learn how to search the scriptures. They are taught how to find God's word and compare it to whatever they're learning in maybe perhaps an encyclopedia or another research book. They always go back to the scriptures.
You have been studying something that is called the battle lines, and you've been trying to use this to motivate youth. Tell us about that.
Oh, the battle line. Well, the very first thing that I'm finding with youth before we even talk about battle lines is that they, for some reason, do not think that there's two sides. Either you're a Christian or you're not a Christian. For some reason, they have drawn a line that there's this gray area and that they're in charge of their, as far as they have their own thoughts, they have their own choices, which we do, and we know where agency falls into that. But for some reason, as I did with youth, there is this gray area. And they remain neutral. They do not want to choose. And so it's been a lot of fun as I've been introducing these battle lines and what they are. It's just really, it's the culture war. A lot of it is just the music, the dance, you know, our culture versus what God has revealed through his prophets on how we are supposed to believe when it comes to that. Stewardship and consecration, patriarchal order. Those are battle lines. These are battles. And these children do not even know that they're at war and that they are, if they're not working for Christ, then they're working against. And so that's one of the things that I have been working really hard to awaken these youth with as I work there, is to expose them to these battles and to these things that are happening around them that they have accepted as tradition or just the norm. And we know that when the restoration came about with Joseph Smith, there was a counterfeit program. And through that counterfeit program, because whenever anything that God reveals, Satan's going to set up his religion to counterfeit it. And we know that, according to Benson, that he specifically names five antichrists. And if you look at their dates of when they came into... I'll call it power, when they came into power. These are men that are dead, and they're ruling from the grave still. And the five that Benson names, and there's more that he says, but the five that particularly he names is John Dewey, which is the father of education, and he set up the education program to battle against the restoration and the revealed principles that you can find. They are laid out in the scriptures in D&C 109, they're laid out there what God wants for education, specifically in the principles there. But John Dewey set this educational program up to be a counterfeit to it. And Karl Marx, who is over communism and the government program, Charles Darwin over science, and we've got Sigmund Freud, the philosophies, and John Keynes, who's over the economics. And so at Kimber Academy, we expose these five antichrists. It was really fun. A few weeks ago, we were coming around to discussing this time period. I went and studied their language, just the language of these five men and some of the key phrases that they've kind of coined and put out there. We were studying Korhor in Alma. And, you know, of course, they're all like, yes, I would recognize an antichrist. I would know exactly the philosophy, you know, if it was being taught to me. And I said, do you really? Well, let's talk about five antichrists. And they're like, there's no antichrist now. And so we turn to Benson, Ezra Taft Benson, when he says, from a watchman on the tower, that he warns us of these five and that how it will destroy the education, the church. I was exposing some of the language and the key phrases, and they just sat there and they're just like, these are things that we have heard all of our life. And I'm like, me too. I've just accepted them as this is where we're at in society. This is what we believe, that there's these such things. And so it was a lot of fun. But that's something that we do. These battle lines are real. These men that rule from the grave, this is real. And they have a hook on our children and our families with what they set up and what they're doing. And it's all a counterfeit. Along with the battle lines, it's a lot of fun to teach. There's parallels in the Book of Mormon that Bruce R. McConkie shares. There's 51 signs of the times. Bruce R. McConkie, and I know that you, Hannah, are huge on the parallels. And likewise, we've been adding those into the school and just showing the children that, you know, here in the Book of Mormon, this is what's happening. here's what's happening at the same in our nation, and then also to share the battle line. Here's a battle line that destroyed. This is a part of what destroyed that time period of belief. And so it's been a lot of fun to bring this into the school this last year and a half, and just helping to awake those children even more. A lot of times they come in and they'll just kind of, they tune out. They've heard these Book of Mormon stories forever. And it's not until you show and expose the battle lines or the culture of happened then and happened now, it really creates an awakening.
So you're saying not only are they going through the Book of Mormon and recognizing, oh, okay, this happened in the Book of Mormon, this is the same in our day, but you're taking it a step further and saying, okay, where is Satan attacking the gospel of Jesus Christ? What's his philosophy? What's his counterfeit? And then comparing and contrasting the two. When children are able to see that, when, as you mentioned a couple, you have creation and the story of creation in the scriptures versus Darwinian evolution, when you have socialistic communism versus the economic principles in the scriptures versus stewardship, consecration, when you have children being viewed as a blessing in the scriptures versus in our modern culture, children being viewed as a burden. When you start to see those, does that awaken in children an excitement and a passion to do something? And if so, why is that?
Well, anytime you hear truth and you can connect it to your own life and situation, it does create a awakening. And we're trying to move away from these children that are very apathetic. And so there is a stirring that's going on. As far as now, we just went through our first 10 weeks of the Book of Mormon and really exposing this. And so we're still kind of new to putting all of this together, showing them the culture, showing them things that are happening at the Book of Mormon at the same time. And then, of course, these personalities and events in the Book of Mormon. And so there is an excitement, and there is a, what are we going to do? Like when we did talk about John Dewey, Karl Marx, Darwin, Freud, and Keynes, there was a lot of, oh, can you do this again tomorrow? Or you need to share this with my parents. So there is an excitement as far as it just is exposing light to a very dark period that we're living in right now.
It makes the gospel real.
It makes the gospel
real. And so instead of a game or just something that gives warm and fuzzies, okay, this is something that I bring into my everyday life. And this is, I think at the same time, children always have, they want to fight for something. They don't want to just sit idle. They want a cause to fight for. And so when we take, I think in our, so many youth today, we've taken that cause away.
Yes.
So they find their cause in baseball cards, in video games, in going to movies, in trying to fulfill that empty void. And so what you're trying to do is sit them down and explain, no, this is the cause. This is the battle that's going on between light and darkness,
yes.
Truth and a lie.
Yes.
And you can do something about it.
You can do something. I have a history teacher that is so passionate. And just last week, he was so excited because he had reached a point in his lesson to expose these five antichrists too. And he was like a kid in a candy store. And he was so excited to teach them. And he's a fist pounder, and he's just hitting the pulpit and just saying, are you understanding? These are dark men, and you do not have to follow this. And here's the restoration. And he was showing on the whiteboard, you know, we've got Joseph Smith and Andrew Jackson, and we know many people do not like him, but he was a great, great spiritual giant too. And so we've got this beautiful time period, and then this dark period, and we do not have to, just because these are traditions that we do not have to follow, but let's follow where the light is and these revealed principles and this revealed program.
Now, some parents I know would say, oh, I don't, you know, I want my child to focus on the positive. That's kind of negative. I mean, that's, you're talking about Satan's counterfeit kingdom. You're talking about, you know, Karl Marx and John Dewey and Freud. And what would you say to parents that are concerned that introducing their child to the battle lines will decrease their faith rather than increase?
That's a really good question, because I am hit with that one a lot, and I have tried to come up with a good comeback, but we just are, according to President Packer, he said we are heading into times that we've never seen, you know, hard times like we've never seen before. And I just do not think that there is time to mess around. Everybody, the nation, you feel it in the nation, you feel it in the president election. You just feel that we don't have a lot of time left. So I, as an owner, and I just personally do not feel that there's time, and I have an urgency, an urgent desire to get this word out to as many families as I can. I feel a stewardship over it. Too many youth come through the door, and we are a society that's educated on food, fun, fantasy. And the first time I heard that, I'm like, what are you talking about? And, you know, I really had to just go look at our society and our programs that we're a part of. And yes, everybody wants just fun and food and fantasy as the conversion to whatever it is. And that's not the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so if you're looking for that, that you will not find it here. Every single thing that we do, all of our activities, all of our lessons, all of our teachings, everything we do has an aim involved. Benjamin Franklin said that learning to serve God, family, and country should be the aim and end and all learning. And so if you really take that to heart, and you really are serious about that, you don't just learn to have fun, and you're not just learning to serve self and what you want to do and how you feel, but what is needed, and to put an aim in there. One of the books on a reading list on the Joseph Smith Foundation, which will start any family on this path into awakening and to getting involved into to understanding the battle lines, and that this is a fight for Christianity. Either you're on that side to defending Christ, and it's not your way but his way and what he's laid out, or you're working against. One of the books that we grabbed off of that as a family to read was called The Heavenly Man by Brother Yoon, and it is about this young man who just gets a very small glimpse of the scriptures. He just enough to fill his entire soul. He's from China, and this is probably a story about 30, 35 years ago, give or take. And he gets a small little scripture and how it fills his whole being and what he needs to do and how he needs to go outwards and to serve and to get that scripture, just the scripture alone, to everybody, and how he hungered and thirsted for the Bible after that. At that time, China, you could not have the Bible, and so it needed to be smuggled in. And so he fasted and he prayed for 40 days, I think it was, or longer, for access to a Bible so that he can go teach others. And as you're going through this story and you're realizing what he did just for one scripture, and how he was tortured in jail and everything for this. He did get a Bible, and then he would memorize chapters and then go and teach it to other people, and how it just freed a country. It was freeing those people that would listen and to take heart. But he was put into jail. He was captured, and what his mission was like, even in confinement, and how he was still a missionary, and just based upon, and many times I think about that, and we were having family discussions about, wow, we have the fullness of the gospel right in front of us, and how we take it for granted. But back to your question, Hannah, about what would I say to parents? I just would say there is no cushioning. We have got to get people out there to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the only way to defend it is to know the opposite. And you have to know what these five antichrists are up to, this counterfeit program, what is coming. And we have got to get prepared. And we have got to fight like no other, as Brother Yoon and his family and this country did itself, no matter the price. We need youth that are willing to step up and to do and to restore.
Yes. The Heavenly Man by Brother Yun. That's an inspirational book. And just as you said, so it's the story of basically how Christianity came back to China after Mao completely destroyed it. And I've also read it. And like you said, that's that example of someone who the story starts when the boy is in his teens all the way until he's an adult. And that story is really inspirational. I remember coming into your school one day, and there was a mother there who had been having her younger children listen to the Heavenly Man. And she was just, I remember she was just glowing. She was so excited. And she was talking about how her, I don't remember how old he was, but just one of her younger sons.
11 or 12 he was.
Yeah. And he was just riveted to that story. And he was riveted to what was going on in China and how people are suffering for, just as you said, even just a piece of scripture, or if they can get their hands on a Bible, that is priceless to them, and how they're willing to be tortured and killed and put their family at risk for the name Jesus Christ. And I think, like you're saying, bringing that awareness to youth, and not only, I think a lot of our listeners will understand that feeling of urgency that you described, that feeling of there is a lot to do and we need to move forward and we have to defend the gospel and we need to reach more people with the message of the truth. We need to expose the deceptions that are going on. But a lot of people don't think of the aspect of bringing that to youth. You're saying, yes, there are battle lines and yes, there is urgency, not just among adults. We need to bring that to the youth. Do you think the youth are ready for that?
Yes. Yes. It's cute. Cleon Skousen said that these children that are born now are actually spiritually ready and physically 10 years more advanced than we were. And it's true when you sit there and sometimes the concepts and even the doctrine that you're teaching, they are hungry for more. They do not want it dumbed down. They do not want it in snippets. They want it said how it is. And so it's Darlene, our little junior A class, which is for your ages 5 to 8, right in there. That teacher is wonderful. And how she says, she just sits there and they just want to keep on going and they want more and more and they want it as black and white as can be. And so we have a generation that is ready. We have starved this society of truce, and a lot of things have been buried. But we need to get with the restoration program. One family is on fire after talking to them about the movies and purging and music and all of that, that over the weekend, last weekend, she said to me, our family has always watched good stuff. I just don't think there's any room for improvement whatsoever. And she says, but I will go ahead and take this to my husband and, you know, we'll see if we can, what we need to do. And it was so cute. A few days later, she texts me and she goes, I can't believe it, but there was 150 movies and CDs that we purged that we found to get rid of. And so I love watching these families, feel it, see it, know it, and how I like to explain it is that there's no more gray lines. We cannot teach to just be neutral anymore. We have got to go and restore God, family, and country, because we will need a youth that is ready. We need to restore God, family, and country to its fullest. All of these principles, just as Joseph Smith, it was a very short period that those early saints got to enjoy it before these counterfeits came into place. We need youth that are ready and families that are ready, that have purged the culture and are fighting the battle lanes and are cleaning up their homes and getting ready to restore the Constitution. That's our mission.
Thank you for listening to this LDS Answers audio selection. If you seek real LDS answers to the tough questions, please visit www.ldsanswers.org. LDS Answers is a project of the Joseph Smith Foundation.